And our scripture reading today comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and beginning in verse 16. But thanks be to God, who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus. For he not only accepted the exhortation, but being more diligent, he went to you of his own accord. And we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. And not only that, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord himself, and to show your ready mind. Avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift, which is administered by us, providing honorable things not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have often proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent, because of the great confidence which we have in you. If anyone inquires about Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker concerning you. Or if our brethren are inquired about, they are messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ. Therefore show to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. And may the Lord add his blessing to the reading of his word. I'll get organized, maybe. Paul has been writing in this section about giving, and a very specific sort of giving and gift that's been the discussion. And today we're going to be looking at a part here where he talks about some of his workers, co-workers who are going to be involved in this. And this whole thing, a big part of what he's writing about the collection, Paul has a constant thread running there where he is, I won't say he's defending himself, but he is perhaps building a guard to try to prevent false accusations that might be brought against him. We don't really see a lot of accusations brought against Paul through, yes, he gets stoned and tarred and feathered and all this kind of stuff, but nobody's really accusing him of wrongdoing other than the Jews of teaching Jesus. But the fact that so much of his discussion has this undercurrent of doing things very, very carefully, being very proper, so that there can be no false accusation made against him, tells me that he had to deal with this, that this was a part of his reality, is that there were always people in these different churches that he served and everything, there were always people who were willing to accuse him of doing something wrong. And it shows up in the way that he addresses this collection that's going to be taken. And he's presented his arguments for why they should take up the collection. Now, just remember that this was a collection that Paul wanted them to make, that he or others were going to deliver to Jerusalem, to the church in Jerusalem or the other needy churches in Judea. And so this was something that had always been a big part of his ministry. And so he's persuading the Corinthian church that they had committed to this in the past. They needed to finish this commitment. They needed to send this. And they needed to do it because it would be an act of love. It would be a demonstration of their love for the believers throughout Judea. And it would also be a blessing to them, that they would be blessed. And so having laid out those reasons, that justification for the gift and why the Corinthian church should be involved in it, he now gets into some very practical sort of things that have to do with it. And one of the things that is significant, as Paul talks about the gift and he talks about the collections and everything, is that he tries very hard not to be the one who's actually handling the money. That he's not the guy that's collecting the gift and handling that. And I'm not sure exactly where this comes from, but back in Acts chapter 11, when Paul is at Antioch, in chapter 11, 27, it says, "In those days, prophets came from Jerusalem to Antioch. Then one of them, named Agabus, stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. This they also did, and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul." So this is the beginning of Saul's ministry, his helping ministry to these churches. And this continues throughout his time. And whether there was something that went on with this or what, but from this point on, he becomes kind of reserved in terms of wanting to be the one who carries the gift. He wants to care about the believers. That's one of his major ministry points, is to take care of those, particularly the believers, who are suffering in these different places, and particularly Jerusalem and Judea. Remember that Paul has this very, very strong connection to the Jews of Jerusalem. The fact that he was trained as a Pharisee, he sat under Gamaliel to study the law, that this is his city, his people. He's got that very strong connection. And despite the fact that they reject him and that they don't treat him very well, and he goes and he's sent by God to minister to the Gentiles throughout the entire Mediterranean region here, he still has that heart for his people back home, and he wants to care about them. And so the ministry there becomes an ongoing act that he carries out pretty much everywhere he goes. And so when he went, in Galatians, we have a record of when he went to Jerusalem, the first time that he actually goes to Jerusalem after his conversion. In Galatians chapter 2, there's a big chunk here, but I'm just going to read a couple of pieces off of it. But chapter 2:1, it says, "Then after 14 years, I went up to Jerusalem with Barnabas and also took Titus with me." Okay, so this is probably the taking the gift to Jerusalem. And so there's a bunch of other things that go on in this, and the false accusations that are made about him taking a Greek into the temple and everything. But when we get down to verse 10, he says, and they've had this discussion over whether the Gentiles needed to be circumcised and whatever. He says, "They desired only that we should remember the poor, the very thing which I was eager to do." So this is out of Paul's commission, I guess, by the Jerusalem church. This is the thing that they were most emphatic about. You know, obviously the gospel was at the heart of all of this. That's not called out explicitly. But the fact that he was going to take care of the poor, and particularly the poor back in Jerusalem, those in the church. So he's had this ministry, and it goes on and on throughout his ministry. It shows up in a bunch of different points in his letters. 1 Corinthians has one of the better expositions of some of the things that were going. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. He gives details to the church. Now, this is maybe not quite a year before 2 Corinthians, but he writes to them, "Now, concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia," okay, so that letter to the Galatians, those are the churches that he wrote to in Galatia. You know, so you must do also. So he's given all these churches that he started these instructions. "On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. And when I come, whomever you approve by your letters, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem. but if it is fitting that I go also, they will go with me. So here in 1 Corinthians, he says, this is the instruction I've given to all of those churches throughout Galatia, all of those churches that I planted there. The instructions that I gave them were to make a collection, store it up, and then when he came, that they were to appoint someone to carry the gift. He didn't say, I'm going to come and I'm going to take it and carry it to Jerusalem. I'm going to come and then you will appoint someone to take it. And again, you know, this is Paul backing himself away from being the one who handles the money. And that's a protection for himself. He can't be accused of something. And this is someone that the church appoints. So the church selects somebody from among their members, somebody that they know, somebody that they trust, and that they can say, okay, well, he's a trustworthy guy. We know that if we hand him this sack of money, he's going to take it there and he's going to deliver it, and there's not going to be any problem with that. So, he's setting up a system to try to avoid accusations. And boy, throughout the history of Christianity, and you know, to be honest, this is not something that starts with Christianity. Throughout history, the question of the motives of those collecting money for charity or for the church has frequently been questionable. In our Wednesday night Bible study, we're studying Samuel, and we have the sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, and they take advantage of the sacrifices that are being brought and offered so that they can gorge themselves on the best cuts of meat. You know, so they are stealing from that was given to God to feather their own nest. The temple, the people gave a tax to the temple, and it got to the point where they weren't using that, the priests or the people who were in charge weren't using that to fix the temple. And Joash, King Joash, actually has a separate box made to collect the offerings that it's going to be supervised, and it's going to go directly to the builders because they can't trust any of the intermediaries because people were stealing the money instead of paying the contractor. Gotta pay your contractor, folks. It's really important. The disciples, you have Jesus and his disciples, and we've got one of the disciples who is in charge of the money, and he's stealing from the money box. Judas is stealing from the money box. And this is, I mean, you've got a pretty good group of people here, I guess, you know? And that's lining his own pocket from that was given for the ministry of God. You know, throughout history, this is something that has gone on, that people have helped themselves to that money that was given. They've diverted it. They've found ways to use it to benefit themselves. And it continues today. I mean, I pulled examples from the Old Testament and New Testament there because we could probably all think of some example out of the modern era that's been in the news or our own experience or whatever, where somebody has embezzled money from the church. And in doing that, they've undermined the mission of the church. They've undermined the integrity. And this is really the issue. That money was given for a holy purpose. And the thing that becomes extremely important is that the honor and the integrity of the person who is handling that money has to be held high. They have to be somebody that can be trusted. And so, you know, we do all sorts of things to try to make it so that we guarantee that accusations cannot be brought. And you know, Paul is establishing a lot of these principles in what he's doing. You know, we have two people count the money together so that it's not one person. We do these things not because we distrust somebody, but because we want to make sure that there can't be any possibility of an accusation being made. And so if Paul is to show up at these churches, if he were to just walk in and say, you know, I'm here, give me the money, and I'll head back to Jerusalem. Now, particularly at that time, the likelihood of the Jerusalem church then sending a receipt back is probably low. You know, it's certainly not coming by email. And even if, you know, they do get a receipt, you know, there's a long period of time. And so there's just a lot of opportunity for somebody. You know, Paul took off from here with 300 denarii, and the receipt only says 225. You know, something went adrift. You know, there's a lot of opportunity for somebody to make accusations. But when he says, okay, you guys appoint somebody from your church, somebody that you know and you trust. This is why it's important that we meet together. It's important that we fellowship together, that we get to know one another. We get to know one another's character. And we know that we can trust somebody. You don't give a position of trust to a newcomer to the church. You know, somebody shows up and they've been in the church for 3 weeks, and they say, oh, well, how would you like to be our new treasurer? You know, no, that's probably not a good church governance plan. So Paul is trying to make sure, through all of these little things that he's done, he's trying to make sure that accusations can't be made against him, and it kind of slops over that accusations can't be made against others. So, he's giving a character recommendation here, starting with Titus. And what he says about Titus is Titus is... Oh, come on. Ugh, dropping things on the floor. What he says about Titus here is... where did we go? I lost myself. I'm in wrong Corinthians. He says, thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus. 2 Corinthians 8:16. So, the same into you. The same as who? The same as Paul. Saying, I'm thanking God that he's given Titus the same concern for you that I have. Now, we've talked about, you know, Paul's relationship and Titus's relationship with the church there. But when Paul says, you know, he cares about you the same way that I care about you, that's probably the highest praise you could possibly get from Paul. You know, that this is an example that he holds up as he sets himself up as the this is how I show my love for you. This is how I show my care for you. I want you to see that Titus has this same kind of love and care for you. And about Titus, he says, you know, he not only accepted the exhortation, but being more diligent, he went to you of his own accord. Is that Titus wasn't just sent by Paul. Paul didn't just round him up and say, okay, I need you to go and go to Corinth and deal with this thing. Is that Titus wanted to go on his own. He took his own initiative to go to Corinth, to take care of these things. And because he's willing to do that, Paul says, this is an evidence of his love for you. Because, frankly, going to Corinth at that time involved dealing with a lot of issues. So, he's got Titus introduced here as someone who has gone on his own initiative. And then he adds, and we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. So Titus has somebody else going with him. Now, it's always fun when we have something kind of difficult to sort out here. It says we have the one who was brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches, and not only that, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord himself. And so that's kind of, you know, back there in 1 Corinthians, he was talking about you will, you know, select somebody, appoint somebody, choose a reliable person to carry it. So this is one of those reliable persons who was chosen by one of the churches elsewhere or by multiple churches elsewhere to carry that gift. So he's being attested to not just by Paul, but by these other churches, that they trusted him, that he has the reputation and the integrity that these other churches in Galatia were willing to trust him to carry the offering. Now, who is this? What is the person named here? We don't know. Hey, that was easy. There's a lot of speculation on these things. Whenever you have a we don't know, people want to answer that question. They want to come up with some answer. Well, is this Barnabas? Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people think this is Luke, the great physician, Luke, the beloved physician. He's that one. Get the right doctor. That's another one of those important things. Get the right doctor. But the beloved physician, the writer of Acts, who traveled with Paul extensively. You know, and why do they think that this is Luke? Well, it says this bit here about whose praise is in the gospel. That he's, you know, a giver of the gospel, a writer of the gospel. That's what his reputation is. Honestly, that's a pretty weak, interpretation to name Luke. Yet, this has been kind of throughout history the accepted answer. There's actually a charitable institution of St. Luke, which is part of the Catholic Charities and stuff, that is based on the fact that Luke is the one who carries... You know, first of all, it doesn't matter. I mean, your salvation does not hinge on figuring out who this person is. It's always good to bear that in mind. That's the litmus test on some of these. And secondly, what is important is that Paul is emphasizing the character. Now, he's obviously going to, when he gets to the church, they know who he is. They're going to know him. That's kind of implied in that. But he's emphasizing the character. He's saying, this person is going along because they have these characteristics, because they are respected in the gospel. Well, what does it mean that their praise is in the gospel? Is that it might mean that they're a preacher. They're somebody who is respected and honored because they speak the gospel. It might merely mean that they're someone who is praised in the gospel in the sense that they are somebody who lives up to the gospel of Jesus Christ. That they have the praise of these churches in the gospel because of the way that they live, the way that they act, that they are living up to the expectations of Christ. And that's kind of the way that I prefer to think of that, is that they are someone who is sound in doctrine, you know, they praise in the gospel, and that they have a close relationship with Christ, and so they are above reproach. They're somebody that they can be trusted to carry that gift. And so, you know, once again, Paul is using people other than himself to ensure that he's not in that position where he can be accused. He's also spreading the work around to other people. He is willing to let others do some of these tasks. He knows he can't do everything. And so he equips and he sends and he encourages and enables. So these are other like-minded followers of Christ. And you end up with basically a team of people. And any accusation against Paul is not an accusation against Paul. It's an accusation against the entire team. Well, suddenly it gets much harder to bring an accusation when you're not just saying, oh, Paul did this, but Paul's group did this. Now you're accusing, you know, a whole bunch of people who have a reputation. In this case, we've got somebody with a reputation clear across Galatia, an entire Roman province. They're very, very well known among all these churches. You're accusing them along with Paul. You know, so the fact that you have more people who are trustworthy, more people that responsibility is spread out with, means that you can't bring accusation against a single person. And it's less likely that somebody is able to bring any kind of false accusation. Incidentally, I say accusations. Always remember, this means a false accusation. If you got somebody who's embezzling money, that gets us into completely new territory. Paul is protecting those who are doing this honorably and honestly. I don't think he has any intention ever of protecting somebody who is committing fraud. Paul wants to make sure the gift gets collected and sent. He wants to make sure that the church in Jerusalem is blessed through this gift. But he also wants to make sure that those who are collecting it, those who are giving in the churches, who are supporting this ministry, that they have confidence that what they give is going to do what they intend for it to do, that it's going to get to the people who need it. Have you ever, seen somebody collecting for some charity outside of Safeway or whatever, and you think, well, that's a good cause. And then you think, how do I know that this person is collecting for that charity? What do I know about that charity? There are so many opportunities we have to give, to be generous. And as the one who gives, and this is one of those things, your blessing is in the giving. But we want to be reliable. We want to be good stewards of what God has given us. And so we may be blessed in giving, but if we're giving to a not very reliable charity where, 10 cents on the dollar makes it to the task at hand, that doesn't do the blessing at the other end that we're looking for. That doesn't accomplish what we want. Paul is trying to make sure that the people in Corinth and the people in those churches in Galatia all know that the money they put into the collection for those poor churches in Judea, that money they put in there gets there. It doesn't disappear along the way. They want to have, that they have confidence that they are being a blessing, not just being blessed in themselves, but being a blessing. Because giving is also, it's a sign of love. It's a sign of love that we love somebody that we gave, but if that doesn't get there, it's one of those James things where he says, if I say to you, go, be blessed, be warm, be clothed, and I don't give you anything, it didn't do a lot for that person. And so he says, make sure that it gets there. He's setting up a system that, just like it is now, same thing then, that you needed to have reliable, trustworthy stewards of God's goods who could take care of that. And so he goes on there in verse 21, he says, providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. So there's the justification on all of this. It's not enough that I give and God sees that I give. God sees my generosity, but I want that generosity to also be seen, or the work of that generosity to be accomplished where it's supposed to go. Because when that gift from Corinth goes to Jerusalem, the people in Jerusalem praise God for what they've received, that God is glorified in that giving. And if it doesn't get there, God doesn't receive the glory. And so he says that this is providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but that in the sight of men, that the people who receive it, the people who see that the churches care for their poor, that they care for those in need, the people who see that going on, look at the church and they say that God is at work. That these people are doing something and God is using that and it's accomplishing something there. That's an important part of Paul's practical ministry, is that the people who are receiving the gift are blessed by what they receive, that people who observe this from outside see God at work and they see that this is something that the believers are doing, that God is leading them to take care of one another. It's a manifestation of love, a demonstration of God's love in love for one another. So, we have Titus, and we have that second brother who is praised. And finally, we have a third brother. He says, "And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have often proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent because of the great confidence which we have in you." Again, an anonymous brother. And again, probably not someone that we really need to worry about who it is. Again, some have said this is Barnabas. Others have come up with various other possibilities. Doesn't matter. But what is interesting is he's described as diligent in this translation. You may also, in some different translations, you might have earnest. You might have eager. You might have zealous. You know, these are the other translations of that Greek word. But the idea is that he's somebody who is intensely excited about the gospel. Somebody who is thrilled by a chance to serve the Lord. You know, this is not someone who is just saying, okay, yeah, another day's work kind of thing. This is somebody who is going out of their way to make sure that God is going to be seen in the work. Somebody who wants to do God's work and eagerly goes out to do that. And so, he's not just someone there. This isn't something that he's declared about himself. Paul says this about him, and he says, whom we have often proved diligent. Now, that word proved means tested. It means that he's been tested, that Paul has tested him. You've heard the saying, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. You test the quality of the pudding when you eat it. That's the test, is what does it taste like? And so when he says, we've proved him, we have seen him in situations where his zeal has been obvious to us. We've seen him in difficult times, and he has been diligent through those. He says he's been put to the test, and he showed himself reliable. And the fact that he knows that this guy can endure, he knows that he can do that, he's more than satisfactory for the job. He's diligent to go and be an eager servant to the Corinthians. And part of why he's willing to do this and why he has this eagerness to go to Corinth is because he says, because of the great confidence which we have in you. Paul lays this on the Corinthians several times. He says, I've boasted about you. I've told people how good you are. And here he is using that again. He says, you know, this brother, I've told him about you, and because of what he's heard about you, he's excited to go there and serve you, excited to go and help you guys. And so we've got these three guys here, and he's going to basically give them a cover letter, a letter of recommendation, introduction. 23, he says, if anyone inquires about Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker concerning you. Puts Titus on a par with himself. Or if our brethren are inquired about, they are messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ. So this is the letter of recommendation. Paul earlier said, I don't need a letter of recommendation. You know, you have to know me by who I am and what I preach. But he gives these guys that letter of recommendation. And he says about Titus, he's my partner and fellow worker concerning you. That implication of partner, that we work together. That treat him as you would treat me. Respect him as you would respect me. Recognize that his ministry is the same as my ministry. But the others, you know, he says, you know, and if the others are inquired about, he says, they are apostles of the churches. That is literally what it says, that they are apostles. And an apostle is somebody sent out with a message. And so they are going, they are commissioned by the churches. They are sent with a gospel, with a work. And so they go out as messengers from the churches, apostles carrying the gospel, and in this case, doing the collection and some of the other things there. And that very puzzling bit, because it phrases very awkwardly, they are the messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ. And I hate to have to say that the English doesn't help us a great deal, and neither does the Greek. Because I honestly am not certain, and I'm not sure that the other Bibles, the studies that I looked at, and commentators and everybody, don't seem to be certain whether he's talking, when he says the glory of Christ, whether that applies to these men, these apostles, or whether it applies to the churches that they come from. You can read it both ways. And also, what does it mean to be the glory of Christ? And I think, you know, take the simple way out on this, because it's an easy kind of thing, that they are going out, they are working for the glory of Christ, that they represent Christ as they go out. They're doing God's work. And as they do that, people look at them, they should see Christ. That these are men who are living up to that expectation that we demonstrate Christ in who we are and how we live. That when people look at us, they see Jesus. He says, this is who they are. They are apostles coming from the churches, and they bring the glory of Christ. They show you the glory of Christ in how they serve, being eager and diligent, and being the other guy who is, you know, he's praised. He's a representative of the gospel. And so he finishes this up. He says to the church in Corinth, therefore show to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. He's back to saying, you know, I talk good about you guys all the time. Don't let me down. I sometimes feel like Paul has been let down in a bunch of different ways, because he's got a little bit of concern that they're not going to live up to what he's said. He's afraid. But they don't. They come through for him. And it's an amazing thing. But he tells them, show to them, that is to Titus and the other two guys, and before the churches, that's the churches of Galatia, the ones that these guys are coming from, the ones that they're going to go back to. And so the reputation of the Corinthian church is going to be spread by these guys. He says, show them the proof of your love. And there's so many pieces to that. How does the Corinthian church show these three guys the proof of their love? One is in the collection. This is the heart of this passage, is that collection. Show them the proof of your love by showing that you love those people back in Jerusalem who are in need, that you're willing to give to take care of their needs. Show your love in that. But also show them the proof of your love in how you treat them, how you receive them. That you respect them as you respect me, Paul says. You know, I'm your spiritual father. I founded the church. I led many of you to the Lord. You know, you have this relationship with me. Show that same love to them in how you treat them. And this is a message for all of us, that how do we receive those from outside? Do we show them the proof of our love? Are we willing to demonstrate our love to those who come to us, to those who are from outside of us? Are we willing to be demonstrators of love because we care for others, because we're willing to reach out and do what we can to help others? These are the critical characteristics of a church that's representing Jesus Christ. That if we're going to represent Jesus Christ, love has to be that ruling characteristic. That has to be the thing that we show. And we'll all stumble on this. We'll all struggle with this. This isn't something that comes naturally and easily. But this is what we're called to be. We're called to be demonstrators of the love of God manifested in Jesus Christ. We don't just preach the gospel. We're called to live it. And that's how we truly show it to the world around us. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, Lord, I just pray that as we think about these things, as we think about how we live and how we show the world who you are, just pray that you would help each one of us to have a better spirit, a spirit that desires to model Christ to the world, and that no matter how good we might be doing today, that we can always do better tomorrow. And I pray, Lord, that you would just help us to have that kind of desire, that zeal to constantly show your love. Lord, I pray as we dwell on this, that it would be something that lifts us up and encourages us, that helps us to draw close to you ourselves and to draw others close to you as well. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.